And good evening. Welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and we are glad to be back with you guys. I know it's been a couple of weeks since we've gotten to do one of these. We had the holidays, and we were going to be doing some of these through the holidays, but I got flu A and then the pneumonia and all kinds of things over the last couple of weeks. I did not celebrate Christmas, nor did I celebrate New Year's. I was trying to live to see another day through those 2 weeks. And so we got everything all ironed out, fixed the lungs, fixed all those things, and now we are back here tonight. My hope this week is to get to record a couple of episodes to put out for you guys for those weeks that we missed, because I already have a very busy schedule coming up this month, and I want to make sure that there are plenty of things for you guys to still listen to, even if we're not able to always get to do the live show. You know, that's one of the good things about liking and following the podcast is that if we do the live show, it tells you that we're doing it so that you can log in and be a part of it. And so tonight we have, over those last couple of weeks, we have gotten a ton of questions. You guys went way above and beyond the call of duty. We have about, 15, 20 weeks worth of questions here, which I'm glad to have. But I was shocked that by the time I got back into the swing of things and could preach and pastor again and breathe again and thought I was going to actually see the light of day and next year, when we started looking at all the questions and the emails that had come in and the comments and things like that, I was just absolutely flabbergasted by the amount of questions that we were able to accrue in such a small amount of time of me being absent. And a lot of these questions are pretty well thought out. Not only are they well thought out, but some of them are humdingers, to say the least. And so I decided that we would tackle what I think is culturally probably the most difficult of the questions that we have received here of late. And it's not necessarily the most difficult question biblically to answer, in the sense that, you know, we don't have to go down a rabbit hole of 30 or 40 different verses and passages and things like that to ascertain what the Bible explicitly says about this topic. But it's more so that it's a difficult question because the Bible is relatively quiet about the matter, number one. But number two, because this is a question that many different denominations and even religions as a whole highly disagree on. Lots of very difficult humdinger type questions that come into that argument. And then number three, simply because this is a very personal and very opinionated based question. And so what I want us to do tonight, before I drop the bomb of what the question is I want you to determine right now that you're going to listen explicitly to all that the Bible has to say. And if by the time we're done with this, you disagree with me that I didn't read all the verses or the options, I mean, you can go Google it and you're going to find the same two discussions brought up. I mean, this is a question that has been thoroughly ironed out. I've spent a lot of time, even in the sick bed, looking over information about this question because it is a very personally fueled question, as far, you know, personally opinionated fueled question. But it's also a question that's very relevant to a lot of the problems in our culture and in our time and in marriages and in how we view different aspects of marriage and all of these things. So it's a very good question, but it is a question that I implore you to put aside your opinion, Put aside your ideas or your beliefs or your upbringing, whatever it is that you need to put to the side, and listen to what the Bible has to say about the matter, and then listen to what I'm going to give you as far as my opinion. Because that's part of the other issue of this question, is that, if, truth be told, it boils down to a matter of opinion more than it boils down to a matter of provable fact. And so, what is the question? I've kept you in the dark long enough, huh? What is tonight's question? Tonight's question is contraception biblical? And for those of you, I would hope that by now many are familiar with that term. But if you're not familiar with that term, that means birth control. Is birth control a biblical thing? Or better said, if you're a good child of God, you're a good Christian, whatever you want to term it, is it okay for you to participate in birth control? What does the Bible say about this particular subject? And so we're going to talk about what does the Bible actually have to say. And right off the bat, the Bible does not ever say anything explicitly, meaning there is no passage in the Bible that deals directly with birth control, contraception, any of those things. There are two principles that are laid out in the Bible regarding this matter. And so the first principle is that the Bible always presents children as a gift from God, as a heritage from the Lord, as a blessing, as a crown to the aged. Essentially, if we're going to wrap all these things up, it means that children are a blessing to a marriage and to the lives of the individuals within that marriage. And we're going to talk about why that is, because it's not the idea. A lot of people, because even when I was reading, they were talking about how it's considered that God is blessing a woman if she has a barren womb and then she's able to have children. You know, there's a lot of those stories in the Bible. And it talks about how, you know, God was cursing women by taking away their ability to have children, this kind of thing. And that doesn't mean what we think it means, because when we're talking about children being a blessing, we kind of get this idea that, well, if we just keep having kids, we're just going to keep getting blessed. And that's not at all what the idea is of how children can be a blessing. In fact, that is a big reason why children are very much less a blessing right now and more of a curse, because of behaviors, the problems, the disciplinary issues, the absolute wild, ridiculous, animalistic behavior that we are seeing among children right now these days is because of the fact that this biblical idea of children being a blessing is not actually being carried out the way that the Bible means they can be a blessing. So we're gonna dissect that principle after we dissect the next one. The next one is that there is this very weird and arguably graphic story in Genesis chapter 38 regarding a sexual misconduct. And so to kind of give you an idea of what's going on in that, I'm just going to read you the story from the Bible, and then we're going to break down exactly what all of that means and what was going on, okay? So at the beginning of chapter 38 of Genesis, it says, "And it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren," Judah being the son of Jacob, one of the 12 kids, right? "And turned into a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And he took her and went in unto her." So Judah leaves his family, his home, And he goes into the home of a Dulamite named Hira, meaning that he's among the Canaanites where he should not be. And Hira has a daughter whose name is Shua. And apparently she was pretty and he had sexual relations with her. And she conceived and bare a son. And he called his name Ur. And she conceived again, meaning that he kept her around as more than likely as a wife or a concubine. That's kind of argued about whether which of those roles she fulfilled. And conceived again and bare a son. And she called his name Onan. And she yet again conceived and bare a son and called his name Shelah, or Shelah, I've heard both of them, whatever you want to say. And he was at Kazib when she bare him. And Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. And Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. And Judah said unto Onan, go in unto thy brother's wife, and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother. So, Judah's firstborn son, Ur, is so awful that God himself kills him. Okay? That should tell you a lot about these children right off the bat. When the first one is killed literally by the hand of God, that's pretty revealing and insightful as into Judah's ability as a father, Judah's very, very bad relationship with a Canaanite wife, and the character of these children. And so the first son dies without raising up an heir to Tamar. And Judah tells Onan to fulfill what will eventually become a Levitical command, but a common practice in this day and time, which is known as the Leveret or the Leverite. I've heard everybody pronounce it different ways. You know how I am on this show. Pronounce it however you want to. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day, and it doesn't make you sound smarter if you can say it the correct way. If you know what you're talking about, that's all that matters. And a leveret or a leverite marriage, okay? And this particular marriage is one that is very, very different to our culture, because essentially it is as if the brother is fulfilling the position of the dead brother. The idea is that the woman is going to be redeemed because a woman in that day and time that did not either have an heir or have a husband was either destined to die or destined to be a prostitute for survival. It was not a good position to be in. And so this practice was one in which Onan would essentially fulfill the role of Ur until a child was conceived and an heir was given to the estate of Onan's brother Ur, so that his family lineage and line would continue symbolically through this act. It was an act of selflessness because this was not for Onan. This was for Onan's brother and Onan's brother's wife. He was not going to benefit financially from this. In fact, this was going to cost him money. There was no benefit for Onan whatsoever, except if you wanted to argue the sexual act itself of raising up this child. But he was not going to get anything from his brother. In fact, it was going to cost him money and time. It was going to require him to fulfill a role that he would not have had to fulfill. He was going to have to take on responsibilities that were more than the ones that he already had. And so it says in verse 9, and Onan knew that the seed should not be his. Meaning that Onan understands that this is not going to actually be his kid. This child's biologically his kid, but this child would never be considered, nor would he benefit from this child as if the child were his own. says, and so it came to pass, when he went in unto his brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground, lest that he should give seed to his brother. Meaning that Onan goes in, and he enjoys the physical aspect of his obligation, but he does, but after, as the act is coming to an end, he withdraws and does not fulfill his obligation raising up a child. Essentially, he uses Tamar for sexual gratification. That's what he does. But he does not want the responsibility of being, of having to take care of Tamar and a son or a child that would not be considered his child. And he did not want to have to do that, especially if he wasn't even going to financially benefit. In short, even the sex, quote unquote, was not enough for Onan to be willing to fulfill his obligation. He was even more so concerned with the money than he was with getting to have this physical act with Tamar. It says, and the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him also. Then said Judah to Tamar his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shalom, or Shelah, my son, be grown. So, a lot of times people use this story because withdrawing, coitus interruptus, whatever you want to term it, is the oldest form of birth control. And so a lot of people say, see, it displeased God what Onan did. And so therefore, birth control is biblically wrong. And I would say 110% that is incorrect about this story. The point of this story is that Onan's motivation for not conceiving a child was that he would not benefit from what he was doing. He was, so for him, Onan looks at this situation and says, well, I won't benefit from raising up a kid to her, but I'll benefit from the act of making a kid. And so at the last second, Onan does not fulfill his obligation and responsibility to this woman and to his brother because his motivation for not having the child is selfish. He's not going to benefit. And he's not going to take on that level of responsibility for a dead brother who he apparently didn't care for all that much, and for a woman who he enjoys sexually, but he doesn't care about anything else as far as her lifestyle is concerned. I mean, he uses her like a prostitute, and that is what she would become if she was not raised up an heir. It was not the actual act of contracepting or stopping a child from being conceived. It was the motivation for why he did what he did. And so that's why I said this was going to be a hard topic. Because outside of this story, there is no other story that even remotely talks about in the neighborhood of contraception. And even this story does not deal with it like, you know, not like one of the disciples go to Jesus Christ and say, you know, Lord, can my wife take the pill? That didn't exist back then. That was not going to be that question. And not only was there not going to be that question, but there is also the issue that in that particular day and time, contraception really wasn't a conversation. And it wasn't a topic because their lifestyle was vastly different from ours. Now, I'm not saying that the lifestyle differences or time differences or cultural differences change the truth of the Bible. If the Bible explicitly said you cannot use contraception, then I would get on here tonight and tell you contraception is wrong. But the Bible does not have a specific mandate about this particular problem. And I think the reason that it doesn't even get discussed is because people would have as many children as they could back then for a number of reasons. Number one, children died a lot. Mortality in this day and time, and even in the day of Christ, was very high. And the Middle East is a volatile area. There was constantly wars and constant famines and there's horrible things going on that you might have seven or eight kids and be lucky if three make it to adulthood. It was a very bad situation for human mortality. Secondly, most of the lifestyles in that day and time were either rural farming or shepherding, ranching, and even if you were a merchant or you ran a ship or something of that nature, having children guaranteed you essentially free labor to run these businesses. Like, children were a financial investment. Here at our house, we don't have like a full-blown farm. But we do have a small farm. We have greenhouses and rabbits and chickens and ducks. And even before now, we had turkeys and we've had pheasants and quail. And we've basically owned and run every kind of farming idea that you can, especially in the world of poultry. And when we had our daughter, at a year old, she couldn't do much of nothing for me. But at 2 years old, she could go gather the eggs while I was taking care of other things. Well, now at 3 years old, she can help feed the animals, and she can help gather the eggs, or, she can go check on the rabbits. There's different things that she can do. Now, no, she can't do everything, but she can relieve some of the work that I have to do. She can go do some of the simpler tasks while I take care of the more complex tasks, because these animals require health checks and you've got to inspect everybody. If somebody gets sick, they'll be dead within 24 hours. Like, it's a very big deal to raise and actually take care of these animals properly so that they can provide for you and you provide for them. And so children were a financial investment in a lot of ways. They were very beneficial in a lot of ways. She's 3 years old, and we just recently had a ton of pecans shelled, cracked, not shelled, which means that, somebody put them all in the machine and they cracked all of them, but we still have to separate the actual nut from the shell. We had like 200 pounds done, which is a monotonous task. Well, she's 3 years old, but she knows how to separate them. And so while I'm doing something, if I've got to step away from trying to take care of that task when we're doing it, I can say, come here, honey, and she can sit and she can do it, and she laughs and enjoys it and thinks it's fun. So children were a financial investment. And in a lot of ways, they still can be today, but we don't live that kind of a lifestyle anymore, or most people don't anyway. My wife and I, we kind of do to some degree. Now, don't get me wrong, we're definitely not professional farmers by any means. We still go to the grocery store from time to time, but we've never haven't bought meat from a grocery store in 4 years. And even vegetables, we're starting to get to a point that we don't really have to do that anymore. So we certainly don't go as much as most people. But even our lifestyle is not completely dependent on these types of things. If we had a bad harvest, I'll still go to Walmart. Things will be fine. But that was not the way it was back in that day and time. You needed those workers, not only to provide for your family, but to also get everything done, to produce enough to keep your family able to thrive and survive. So you have that difference as far as it goes with having children. And then finally, there is the commandment in the Bible about go forth and be fruitful and multiply, which was given to Adam and Eve. And a lot of times I think we take that verse to an extreme. First, we need to remember when that verse was given. That verse was given when there were two people on the earth. And now sin had entered into the world and humans could die. So if Adam and Eve died without having children, then the whole ball game's over, right? So there's some common senseness to that commandment. And then there are multiple verses that talk about children being a blessing to your life. And children are. But children are not a blessing to your life in the way that we kind of got this idea now. We kind of look at that verse and we go, oh, well, children are a blessing, so I'm going to have 9 blessings. And it's like, well, no, that's not what that means. That doesn't mean that you make a child and they pop out, boom, your life's blessed. That's not what that means. What that means is that children, if properly raised, if properly guided, if properly taught, if given the proper maturation, if given the proper discipline and the proper training, children can be an extraordinary blessing. That's what it means of they're the crown of the aged. Meaning that if you raise your child right and in a good and right way, and that child then does turn out that way, they actually carry that forward, they're an immense blessing to you and to your life, because they are a fulfillment of all of your work and your time and your energy. And then not only that, but children are a blessing to your life because children will make you a better person if you are doing your job as a parent. That's the issue. I often describe children as mirrors. That's what I tell my congregation. And that's what I feel about my daughter personally. And what I mean when I say a child is a mirror is that children, when they are born, yes, they are born with a sin nature and they like to do bad things, but they don't do bad things in a malicious or intentional way, if that makes sense. Like, you know, a child, a baby might cry, and you go over, and the baby's not hungry, and the baby doesn't need the diaper change, and the baby's not mad. The baby just wanted attention. Well, yes, that is a lie at its deepest root. The child crying means something is wrong, something is bad, something is needing attention. But really, that wasn't what was going on. The child merely wanted your actual attention. You know, that is a lie at its basis root, but the baby didn't actually go through the thought process of, how dare mom go do the dishes? I will cry, and then she will have to return. That's not what's really going through the child's head. The child is exploring the world. It shows you that there is a sin nature even in a newborn baby. But that sin nature is not honed and being used in an intentional way yet, okay? Whereas, by the time your child's 2 and 3 years old, there's these interesting things that have started to occur. Your child can walk, your child can talk, your child can get dressed, your child can play with toys, your child is developing this level of independence. And so when I say a child is like a mirror, when my child does good things, I see the things that I am doing and teaching my child well. When she keeps her room clean, that shows me that I am also keeping my room clean, that I have showed her, hey, it's important. Cleanliness is important. It's a good thing to clean up after yourself. It's a good thing to make sure that your chores are done and that your priorities and responsibilities are fulfilled before you move on to something else. But then when my child gets mouthy, I realize, well, where did she learn that from? Where did she learn to be sarcastic? Where did she learn to be a bit of a smart aleck or a little witty or a little clever? And not in a good way all the time, by the way. Well, guess who she learned that from? She learned that from her father, because her father has a very smart, sharp tongue. And sometimes he likes to use it when it's probably not the best thing to do. And so your child is going to show you who you are. If you're putting in the actual time to raise and grow this child and train this child, you're going to know what you're doing well, and you're going to know what you need to fix. And you're going to know what you need to fix not in your child, but in yourself. And so that's why children are a blessing. That's why children can be this very and strengthening, enhancing part of your marriage. is not because the more you pop out, the more blessed you are, but because if you're paying attention and you're trying to do the job that God has given you, which is not to let a kid be a kid, but to actually form an adult, a part of society, and hopefully someone who will become a saved member of the kingdom of God and will carry out that work long after you're dead and gone, then they become a blessing because you learn more about yourself because your child mimics what they see you do. And if you see something in your child that you do not like, guess what, buddy? They learned it from you. And that's why children are a blessing. That's why children can be this amazing thing. That's why, and look, I'm not telling you just have to have one. My wife and I would love to have another child, or there's even times she gets a little crazy and talks about more than just another one. Okay, but that the idea is not go and just make children, 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 children. If you have, you know, 15 of them, your life will be extraordinarily blessed. No, if you're not doing the job that you're supposed to be doing for all 15 of those kids, and God knows you're not, because there's no way in the world that you can give the amount of attention you truly need to give to each of those particular 15 children every single day to be able to train them properly. And so when we have this conversation of contraception, this is my opinion. This is where I'm going to land on this, and then we're actually going to talk about what do we mean by contraception, because there is some forms of that particular word out there in the ether that I would tell you, no, they're not scriptural because of how they function and what they do and how they work. Okay? So here's my opinion on this whole topic as a whole. You can do what you want to with it. You cannot like me because of it. You can love me because of it. I'm going to sleep the same way tonight. Either way, it doesn't matter. My opinion on contraception is that what is your motivation? Are you not wanting to have children because you think children are a horrible, awful thing and they're going to ruin your life and you're not going to be able to chase your own selfish whims and hedonistic tendencies, then yeah, you're dead wrong. You have no, your grounds for contraception are completely wrong. Your motivation's completely wrong. And you probably need to hurry up and have a kid because, number one, all of that's going to go down the drain the moment you look at that child's face. But number two, because you got a lot of garbage in your own life you need to fix, and that kid will make you responsible enough that you'll either fix it or you'll fail. One of the two. But if you're on here and you're saying, look, my wife and I, we would really like to have kids, but you know, right now we make $20,000 a year between the two of us and we're living in a one bedroom apartment. We're going paycheck to paycheck. And you know, if we had a kid, we'd go bankrupt. Well, then yeah, no, don't have a kid. Please don't have a kid. You know, you don't just have children and be like, we'll just see what happens. Like, if you know that you're not going to be able to take care of that child, and I'm not saying that taking care of that child, they got to have a TV in their bedroom and a $2,000 play set in the backyard, and they got to wear, you know, shoes from Nike and pants from Levi or whatever. You know, if you can have a child and you can clothe that child from Walmart and you can feed that child and you can provide an adequate roof over that child's head and you have the ability to provide an education for that child, you have the ability to take care of that child. You know, you might not take care of that child at $200 for a pair of shoes. You might take care of that child at $5 for a pair of shoes. But if you can do that, then so be it. Have a child. But if you're not in a position to properly take care of a child, then no, you shouldn't have a child. Because the motivation for having a child should be that you want to raise an adult. You want to raise a good member of society. You want to make yourself and your marriage better by having this little person who will make you be better. and make you be more responsible. Because if you take that job seriously, you will be better for having that child than you are right now. Because of that responsibility and because of that suffering and because of all the things that come into raising a child. Because it's hard and difficult work. That it's work that if you approach it head on and with a good attitude and with the intent of succeeding, you will have the adventure of your life. But if your motivation for not having a child is so you can be some selfish, useless individual, and you want to have more money so that you can go travel the world or some garbage, then yes, your motivation's wrong. And so that's my opinion. My opinion on contraception is, what is your motivation? Why are you not wanting to have a child? Are you not wanting to have a child because it would be fiscally, or even in marriages, some marriages, it takes 4 or 5 years for them to get founded strongly, and I promise you a child will make or break your marriage. If you go into having a child and both of you haven't grown up by the time you have that kid and you don't grow up when that kid gets here, then yeah, more than likely you'll be sitting in a pastor's office for counseling or sitting in a lawyer's office for a divorce. You know, it's truly a case-by-case basis. What's your motivation? Is it a right time for you? And you'll know that. My wife and I, when we had our first child, we didn't necessarily have a discussion of we want kids or we don't want kids. You know, people hassled us at church about it. When are you going to have a kid? We'd be like, oh, we don't want kids. And we'd just say that because they'd freak out and they'd throw their wings around and flock their feathers and we'd get a good laugh about it later. Because at the end of the day, it wasn't any of their business. So we'd have a good laugh about it. It was never that we didn't want kids. We kind of had an idea of, look, right now, we've been married for 2 years. And in 2 years, we founded our marriage. We got a strong foundation. We know what we're doing on Christmas and Easter. And we know when to tell the in-laws where to go and how to get there. And we know all these things that we need to know to keep our marriage strong. And, you know, if a kid happens, a kid happens. And lo and behold, a kid happened. A kid happened way earlier than we thought it would. But it's been the adventure of our life. Wouldn't trade that decision for the world. Even when that little hooligan comes in and bothers me at my desk for the 55th time while I'm trying to get work done during the day, I wouldn't trade it for the world. And so you have to look at, you got to know yourself, you got to know your motivation, and you also need to ask, you know, are you really going to perform what the Bible says about raising children? Are you going to do that job correctly? Because we've got people all the time, even in churches, having 4, 5, 6 kids, these ridiculous, insane numbers, and they're not raising these kids properly. And then they bring them to church, and they're like, hey, can you fix my kid? And it's like, no, we can't fix your kid. That's your job. And so you have to look at that individual basis. Now, that brings us into a second question, a question that was not asked about this, but I'm going to go ahead and answer anyway. Because I don't want you to get off here and be like, oh, well, Brother Zach said contraception's fine as long as our motivation is a godly, rational, and selfless reasoning. That it's not just so, you know, I can have more money to go shoe shopping or whatever it is that you're doing. On the topic of contraception, there are some forms of contraception that I have absolutely no issue with. But then there are some forms of contraception that I do think would fall under a unbiblical basis, not because contraception itself is explicitly discussed, but because of how that contraception works. So forms of contraception that I don't have an issue with, or that I don't think there is a biblical precedent or mandate or principle that could be applied. To those. Number one is Onan's way of doing things, with withdrawing, for lack of a better way of putting it. In fact, I would say that is probably the best form, not in the sense of what the doctor will tell you about percentage-wise. I would say it's the best form if you're capable of it. Let me put it that way, okay? And I'm trying to keep this as decent as possible. I don't want this to border into vulgarity. I want this to be an intellectual discussion about this problem. Okay? So that's the oldest form of birth control, for lack of a better way of putting it, of contraception that's ever existed. And it truly, if you're somebody that can fulfill that, that's probably the best one. Number two. As far as birth control is concerned, anything that essentially prevents things from arriving at their intended destination, physical item speaking, okay, I would say there's not an issue with. Now, where I think that we start to run into a biblical precedent for contraception being a wrong thing or a morally wrong thing, is when we get into the discussion of things such as the morning after pill, if we get into things such as IEDs and shots, things of that nature. And this is why I have an issue with those things. So after the morning after pill is essentially an abortion pill. That's what it is. It meaning that you could have literally conceived a child and take a Plan B pill and it'll flush everything. That has the ability to happen. Now, that's why they also tell you to take it. Don't take it any more than 3 days after, the sexual act. Okay. Because by that point, the egg would have actually moved and started to establish itself. And you won't actually abort the child, but you can gravely just absolutely cause some horrible detriment to the pregnancy itself. So I have a huge issue with that one, because that one definitely has the potential to end human life if there is human life already established to some degree. The issue that I have with an IED or any of the implants that women can go through, sometimes those have been known to cause quote-unquote abortions of children. I know the statistics are very low, but, if it's even one life, it's still one life, okay? But probably my biggest issue with that is that when I was young and dumb and my wife and I were first married, and we were looking at these kinds of options and trying to consider what to do or not do and all these things, one of the ones that we looked at was that. And now, my wife never actually went through with doing that method, because as we research deeper and deeper, that those can wreak so much havoc on the female body and have even, in some cases, caused sterilization amongst women after they've had them. Like, they've decided to remove them. They're ready to have children. They can't have children because this thing has just absolutely destroyed their body. It messes horribly with hormones. It can cause just ridiculous amounts of weight gain. It can cause mood swings. It can cause thyroid problems. Basically, when you're putting one of these things in, you're playing with your hormones, and that's a very dangerous game to play. And so I do think that you could make a scriptural argument for not using that method. Simply because you're just wrecking your body, and it has a great amount of potential to cause you some physical detriment, and it could even possibly kill a child, because the way those things work, there's still times that a pregnancy can occur, and they can cause horrible issues in the pregnancy or a miscarriage altogether of the child. The other one that I would have a big, big issue with, and I think there would be a biblical argument for such an issue, is birth control shots. And those, it's same reasoning behind the IED, because you're dealing with a shot that can cause a ton of hormone problems. When my wife and I were young and dumb and we first got married, that is the method that she chose probably for the first 6 to 7 months of our marriage. We very quickly cut it, because she went from being the woman that I had always known to a insane person for the first 4 or 5 months of our marriage. And it's because of the ridiculous amount of up and down and hormone things that those shots cause to keep you from being able to get pregnant. And, you know, the doctors will tell you that, well, you still cycle normally and things of this nature, but you actually don't. And not only do you not actually do that correctly and normally, but it can even cause irregularities in those things, and it can mess with those cycles for many, many, many years. And it did for my wife personally. And so I would say that there is a good scriptural basis against that one, because again, they are known to cause detrimental effects to women. You know, you might be that one woman out there that you've got it and you think I'm crazy talking about it right now, and Godspeed to you. I'm glad that it worked out for you. But for the most part of women, it can be cause some detrimental problems. So, biblically speaking on contraception, yes, I'm of the opinion that you can do it. If your motivation is, number one, not a selfish one, and number two, you're open to the idea of life. You're actually open to still having a child. This is not just a, well, I'm never ever going to have children. I don't want to have children. Children are the worst thing that ever happened in the world kind of perspective. If you have that perspective, then I would say, yeah, no, your motivation for contraception is 110% biblically wrong. You have the same viewpoint that Onan did in this act in Genesis chapter 38. But if you're trying to stop or stall having a child because of financial burden problems, or, you know, your marriage is young and not established, or you're not a grown up yet and your wife's not quite grown up yet. Now, I'm not saying use those things as excuse. Grow up already. You know, you're married. Get your act together. Have a child. Start a family. Do something of value in this world. Okay. But, it definitely comes down to what's your motivation. It's a case-by-case basis. And if you are in need of contraception, the age-old one that Onan uses works fantastically. There's all kinds of things at your local grocery store aisle that can stop those particular fluids from going from point A to point B, that those will not cause detrimental problems or effects to you or to your spouse. And so that would be a smart methodology of doing it. And there's even now, I have seen amongst younger people, which is quite a fascinating science. I'm not trying to, quote unquote, tell you what to do. Go do your own research. I don't want any of you to come back and say, hey, you said X, Y, Z, and I ended up pregnant. I'm not a doctor. Okay. That's just my opinion. But I have seen this new idea going around amongst younger people of a fertility calendar, which is a very interesting idea. You know, you track certain times of the month and figure out when things tend to happen, and it essentially gives you a percentage of likelihood for that to happen. And if you're going to have a romantic time with your spouse and you're also still trying to not have a child, you can take that particular low risk, moderate day, whatever it's referred to as, and you're not breaking any biblical precedents at all that way. Like you're carrying out the full act as God intended for the act to be carried out, while also still trying to be intelligent, while also still being open to life. And so there's a lot of methods that can be used in this day and time that I think that there is no biblical principle against, because the Bible, number one, doesn't explicitly discuss the subject, but number two, because they're not ones that are motivated in selfishness, and they're not ones that have the potential to cause the end of the life of a child or the damaging of the life of your wife. And so I think that those are all things for you to take into consideration when you're looking at this question. And so that's been the answer to, I told all of you, this kind of a humdinger of a question of, is contraception biblical? And, you know, that, like I said, the Bible is pretty silent on the topic. We're told about how great of a blessing children are, and we discussed that, and we're told the story of Onan, and we've discussed how that's really not about contraception as much as that is about motivation. And so I hope that this helps you. I know that I'm not really giving you a straightforward answer to this question. I'm giving you some things to consider and to think about. And strangely and sadly enough, this is really a question that You yourself have to pray and talk to God and talk to your spouse and consider why it is that you want it or don't want it, and what your motivations are. And so, you know, I hope that this gives you some pointers to guide that question, to help you discern that question, and to help you get to a place where, if you're not financially or maturely able to have a child yet, that you'll grow up and that you'll get past all those things, and that you get your life founded and established, and that you'll have a beautiful family. Or that if you're on here and you had this horrible point of view that children are the worst things that could ever happen to your life, that you realize that that is a just absolute, immature, hedonistic, stupid view of the world, and that you'll grow up too, and that you'll get married, and that you'll have a beautiful family, and that you'll have the adventure of your life, that you'll enjoy the time that God has given you, and that you'll do the things in this world that are actually worth doing. And so that is the answer to, is contraception biblical? And whew, me, y'all are going to have to quit asking questions of this caliber. I was hoping for something like, what's the Ten Commandments? I'm just teasing. And so next week, we're hoping this week, we've been out of the loop for the last three, because I told you guys I got flu A and then I got pneumonia, and my church didn't see me for 3 weeks. They probably thought that I had resigned and left secretly, or that really my wife was keeping my dead corpse in a freezer, hoping that they wouldn't realize I was dead that early on because of how awful those weeks were. I missed Christmas. I missed New Year's. I missed everything over the last 3 weeks. And so we're going to try this week to record a couple questions for you. I've got some just a very, very full church schedule that seems to get fuller by the day. And so we're going to try to record some for you guys this week to get caught up for the weeks that we did miss, because I was still going to record on Christmas and New Year's, but I could not move nor talk. So that kind of messes with our ability to do these things. But at the latest, next Monday, 7 o'clock, like we always do, we're going to be looking at, do you believe we are in or near the end times? Which is a very interesting question that one of you sent in. Again, much like contraception, highly debated and highly discussed and, more times than likely, argued about topic of the Bible. And so hopefully we can record one of those this week, but at the record that one this week. But at the latest, I will see all of you Monday, 7 o'clock, and we will dive into this question about, what do I think about the end times, and are we in them, near them? What does that look like? And that's definitely a question we've gotten a lot from all of you. It seems like we're living in a day and time of very, very large amounts of uncertainty, and so maybe we can kind of put some minds to rest and to ease as well as we're answering that question. And so, as always, we love all of you. You guys make sure to send in your questions. You can put them in the comment bar, or you can go over on Facebook and pull it up, and there's an email there, and we'll answer your question individually, but then we're going to talk about the question on here, because if you have the question, somebody else does, and possibly even hundreds of other people do as well. And so make sure to take the time, send those questions in. There is no such thing as a stupid question, nor have we actually ever gotten one on here. You know, I know everybody's, well, there is such a thing. Yes, if you do send in and say, what are the Ten Commandments, I might get a little bit of a giggle out of that, but I'm still going to answer your question, okay? And so we get a lot of very well thought out, very deep, and sometimes out-of-the-park questions, things that even I had never considered in all my time as a pastor. And so, you know, send those in. Take that time. Don't be scared. Nobody's going to make fun of you. We're going to answer the question. We want everybody to grow in the Word of God and to grow closer to God and to get a greater desire for studying the Bible as a result of listening to this podcast and hearing these questions and talking about them biblically, spiritually, secularly, culturally, kind of looking at all the angles of what's going on with those questions. And so I hope all of you have an excellent week. Hopefully some of you